Be sure that you do not mistakenly interpret the parable in today's gospel as a condemnation of the rich. Although Jesus does say in another place that it is difficult for the rich to enter the kingdom of heaven, that isn't the meaning of today's gospel passage that we just heard. The gospel illustrates how necessary it is to be generous to the poor and attentive to the needs of others if we hope to enter into eternal life and avoid eternal torment. I'm curious, though, about what was going on inside the rich man's heart as he lived out his life. I think he was a man of faith. He seems to be familiar with Moses and the prophets. He also calls Abraham father, so these are good indications that he was a believer. Yet it appears that his riches got in the way of his paying heed to the teachings of Abraham, Moses, and the prophets. We can infer that the man was so focused on his comfortable way of living that he paid no attention to poor Lazarus lying at his door. And the implication is that the rich man had to more or less step over Lazarus every time he went in or came out of his home. The gospel doesn't tell us that he has a back door that he could use to avoid Lazarus on the front step. Now, the rich man is not necessarily a bad man. He just has misplaced priorities. And in the end, that costs him very dearly. He fails to recognize the important point, which is absolutely critical for all of us on the walk of faith. And that point is this: not all goods are equal, and not all evils are equal. Some good things are better than other good things, and some evils are more serious than other evils. For the rich man, he chose a lesser good instead of a greater one. He chose the enjoyment of his purple garments and fine linens and sumptuous dining instead of the prospect of feeding Lazarus and helping the poor, sick man in his need. The things the rich man enjoyed were good. They just weren't nearly as good as it would have been to help Lazarus. We all know that life can be extremely complicated and complex, and it isn't always obvious which goods are greater than other goods. So the course of action in any given set of circumstances is not always crystal clear. But we can say that whatever the situation is that's facing us, God invites us to choose the greatest good and not settle for something less. So, consistently choosing the greatest good, we develop the ability to recognize the good more easily and readily, and we strengthen our resolve to choose that good. This is basically what it means to form our conscience. Like the rich man in the parable, we are warned not to get caught up in lesser goods and not to forsake the greater good just to further our own agenda. In other words, we shouldn't just pursue our own interests without giving consideration to the bigger picture, the good of our fellow human beings, and the improvement of our world. The bishops of the United States, in their document, Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship, aim to help us to understand the importance of opposing evil and promoting good in the political sphere. And one of the important points they make is exactly the point I've been trying to make here, that there is a hierarchy of good and a hierarchy of evil. Not all goods are equal, and not all evils are equal. in the section of the bishop's document called Making Moral Choices, they begin by teaching us that the first thing we must do is to oppose laws and policies that promote actions that are intrinsically evil. Here's a quotation. They say, "Decisions about political life are complex and require the exercise of a well-formed conscience aided by prudence. This exercise of conscience begins with outright opposition to laws and other policies that violate human life or weaken its protection. Those who knowingly, willingly, and directly support public policies or legislation that undermine fundamental moral principles cooperate with evil." They go on to say a couple paragraphs later, quote, "A Catholic cannot vote for a candidate who favors a policy promoting an intrinsically evil act, such as abortion, euthanasia, assisted suicide, deliberately subjecting workers or the poor to subhuman living conditions, redefining marriage in ways that violate its essential meaning, or racist behavior, if the voter's intent is to support that position. In such cases, a Catholic would be guilty of formal cooperation in grave evil." End quote. In other words, as the bishops write earlier in the document, there are some things we must never do as individuals or as a society because they are always incompatible with love of God and neighbor. Such actions are so deeply flawed that they are always opposed to the authentic good of persons. They are called intrinsically evil actions. They must always be rejected and opposed and must never be supported or condoned," end quote. So, the bishops are not telling us to be single-issue voters, but they are telling us a couple of things. Number one, that we should vote based on a candidate's stance on the issues and not according to their party affiliation. Secondly, to make sure that we understand that not all issues carry the same moral weight, and that the moral obligation to oppose policies promoting intrinsically evil acts has a special claim on our consciences and our actions. Just one more quotation. This is important. They point out, "There may be times when a Catholic who rejects a candidate's unacceptable position even on policies promoting an intrinsically evil act, may reasonably decide to vote for that candidate for other morally grave reasons. Voting in this way would be permissible only for truly grave moral reasons, not to advance narrow interests or partisan preferences or to ignore a fundamental moral evil," end quote. So let me draw a little analogy for you. Let's say you're going to hire a babysitter for your kids or grandkids. One of the candidates is a very skilled individual whose cooking is out of this world and who has a special knack for tutoring and helping children to understand their schoolwork. So you're about to hire the person. When the person informs you that if the children misbehave, even in the slightest way, they will receive cruel torture as a punishment, I would be very surprised if you could find any other positive trait in this individual that would be sufficient or significant enough to outweigh the possibility that this individual might harm your children. It's a similar situation when it comes to voting in an election. A candidate may propose very good and attractive policies while at the same time espousing a position or positions that support an intrinsic evil. So the bishops are telling us that the teaching of Christ and the Church is that the only way we could vote for a candidate like that would be if there is a moral reason that is even more serious than the evil that that candidate supports. So, you can't hire that babysitter saying, well, I'm not hiring them because they would hurt the kids. I'm hiring them because they'd be a good cook and teach, you know, and tutor them well. The bishops are pointing out that if that's our way of reasoning, then we're in serious error. I would just raise one final point for our consideration that follows from this. And this is with the utmost compassion and mercy and reverence to those whose lives have been touched by abortion. We have to acknowledge that this is the deliberate taking of innocent human life. And at the rate it happens in our country, that's about 1 million innocent lives per year. I just raise the question for your consideration, for your prayer, and that you would ask the Lord to help you also, and me too. Is there a more serious matter? Is there something that is more grave that we must consider than opposing this kind of evil? The bishops teach us, if there is something, then according to our conscience, we vote accordingly. But that's something I think we have to really consider very seriously as we prepare to participate in the election. Simply, what we must do today is ask for the Lord's grace to form our consciences well, to humbly allow them to be formed by the teaching of Christ and His Church, so that we don't fall into the same pitfall that the rich man in the gospel falls into, misjudging the importance of one issue over another. But if we invite the grace of God to help us understand better, and we make a good decision according to our conscience, then we need not fear. We need only trust God, the God who has begun many good works in this world and in our nation and in our lives will bring those good works to completion.